Here's the trick, though. If you set an aspiration that is, by some standards, not grounded in reality, like if you have awful customer service and you say one of our values is customers first, you actually have to own your current reality and say, this is not true today, but we are going to work to make it true. It is who we are becoming. Oh, and guess what? You're always working to make that who you are becoming. So I think there's a credibility test. There's a trustworthiness test. Yeah. So if you have awful customer service and you say, you know, our new first core value is customers first, if you don't acknowledge reality, then people are just going to think you're out of touch.
Helping you create loyal customers and loyal employees all through the power of simplicity. This is the Simple Brand Podcast, now heard around the world, including Peachtree Corners, Georgia. I'm your host, Matt Lyles. Wait a minute. Peachtree Corners, Georgia? Hey, that's right in the backyard of this week's guest. Because this week, I'm talking with Mark Miller. Mark has held a 45-year career with Chick-fil-A, where he currently serves as its VP of High Performance Leadership. Man, I bet you can eat a lot of chicken in 45 years. I'm jealous. And beyond his work at Chick-fil-A, Mark works with leaders all over the world to help them build their own high-performance cultures. And Mark's the author of 11 best-selling books, including his latest Wall Street Journal bestseller, Culture Rules, the leader's guide to creating the ultimate competitive advantage. Now, when it comes to building loyal customers and building loyal employees, there's one thing that's so foundational, a requirement, really, that'll help you to achieve that, and that's a high-performance culture. And I was thrilled to be able to learn from Mark that creating a high-performance culture is actually pretty simple. It's not always easy, but it is simple. Because when it comes to creating and leading a high-performance team, it turns out that it comes down to following three simple rules. Mark and I discuss those three rules and what you can do to instill them into your own team. So here it is. Here's my interview with Mark Miller. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, well, I'm excited about this. Congrats on Culture Rules.
Well, thank you. We're very, very thankful to have that out in the world.
Well, so you've written a number of books. This is your 11th book, your 12th book?
There have been several.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up after a while, right? But I think most of your books have been geared towards leadership. But now this one, Culture Rules, is all about culture. So why focus on culture now?
Well, okay, a couple of things I'll say about that. It's still about leadership because our big finding, and we may talk later about some of the research that went into this project. It's a multi-year project, global study. But our big finding is that leaders animate culture. No culture has ever drifted to greatness. They have to be led there. Now, why now? My team, about 25 years ago, actually, began to focus on how to grow leadership capacity. And initially, we were trying to grow that within our organization. And then ultimately, we began to share these ideas with leaders around the world. Because I think I know something about many of your listeners is that when they have a problem to solve or an opportunity to seize, they put a leader on it. And 25 years ago, we found ourselves in that situation, but we looked over our shoulder at our leadership bench, and it was not as strong as it needed to be. We found ourselves talking about, we hope this person can lead in a few years, and I think they'll be ready at some point in the future. And what you do in the short term is you just put an existing leader on the problem or opportunity, which actually works in the short run, but it's the recipe for disaster long term. So our executive committee asked me to figure this out, and I put together a team of really smart people, and we went to work trying to figure out how to help our organization grow leadership capacity. Well, we got some traction with that first effort, that first project, and ever since then, we have been continuing to look to the horizon sometimes we actually try to peek just over the horizon and say, what are the threats? What are the opportunities? And what are the challenges that we can begin preparing leaders for now? And several years ago, we said, we think culture is an emerging topic. I think that was driven in the world by just growth and volume and complexity and all the things that leaders in our world are dealing with. And then it was exacerbated by COVID. So we're very, very thankful that now in a post-COVID world, we have a point of view that we've actually been working on for several years.
That's a different point of view than what a lot of leaders and a lot of organizations have, or in what they practice, actually. So COVID hit, and you've got this big need for leaders to step up, or it could be COVID, it could be a pandemic, it could be a recession, it could be anything else. And you're right. A lot of times, there's not that bench of people who are ready to step up and into that leadership role. So you've got to be able to do that work to help develop them.
We always believe in the principle, it's best to dig your well before you're thirsty. Now, we don't always get it right, and that's not always possible. I want to say that we don't get it right all the time. Sometimes we end up responding to a current crisis, and we do that in part because we didn't see it coming. But when we can get ahead of issues, things like culture, because the pressures that we described and others that we could articulate, they expose what is already there. And even during COVID, you probably know of organizations that was their finest hour. You know, you could look at some organizations and say they thrived during COVID, but others struggled because the pandemic put pressure on the culture. And when you put pressure on something, you expose what's there. And then, of course, most organizations are in the middle. They may not have thrived and they may not have floundered. They're kind of a mixed bag. But in either case, I think leaders have an acute level of awareness regarding the importance of culture. And so we're thankful that we've got a point of view that we can share.
And it sounds like when it comes to situations like this, whether it's, you know, a pandemic or whatever major challenge that comes up, it's not so much about trying to prepare for that situation or prepare for how you're going to react to that situation. It sounds like what you're saying is you'll be able to react appropriately if you've built that foundation, if you've got a high-performing culture in place?
Yes, to a point. I think leadership can provide the foundation, the cornerstone, depending on what metaphor you want to use here. Every challenge has its own uniqueness, and I would not pretend that we were ready for every facet of the pandemic, but we had a foundation. Leaders, everything rises and falls on leadership, and the stronger you can build your leadership, the more resilient, the more agile, the more vibrant your culture will be independent of circumstances.
Okay, that makes sense. I get it. All right. So earlier you mentioned that you and your team, you've at least for this book, you've conducted a lot of research, and data and insights went into this. And so considering the overwhelming amount of data and insights, how did you simplify that into a few key lessons?
All right. So I'm gonna answer that in two parts. One, I want to take a half a step back.
Sure thing.
I have been writing for 25 years, and I always work really, really hard, not just to document and publish my own personal bias. Now, I'm not saying that my books are devoid of personal bias, but we always try to begin with the question, what is universally true about a particular topic?
Wow.
And so we took the same approach here. And so we ended up doing a global research project. We ended up talking to or surveying or doing focus groups with over 6,000 people in 10 countries. And they were senior leaders, mid-level leaders, and frontline associates. And so this was in an attempt to figure out, hey, what's true here about culture? And what we're really looking for is what is true that is transferable. And so how do you simplify all that? Well, again, I had a great team, and we worked on this for a long, long time. And we were actually quite frustrated. And I think your audience may understand some of this because culture is complicated. I mean, let's just be really clear. And it's really hard. So we're going to talk about how to simplify and love your brand. We're going to work and we have worked to simplify this very complex, very challenging, very difficult topic. But none of that is to minimize the enormity of the task.
Right.
So we were actually concerned. We were months, maybe a year into this, and we were like, this is different. This is hard. Not that other topics haven't been hard, but this was really hard. And we were actually inspired by a story from the Navy SEALs. And we had, in fact, conducted interview. Every time we're studying anything hard, we end up interviewing somebody from the SEALs because they're an elite, you know, organization. And there's a lot we can all learn from them. And we were encouraged and inspired. A few years back, the SEALs were going to document what they called their mantra.
Okay.
And the first tenet of their mantra is shoot, move, and communicate. And we thought, huh. And so upon further reflection and conversations, there's more that a SEAL needs to know than that.
Right.
But that's the essence. That's what they need in battle. That's what they need to survive to fight another day. And we just found it so encouraging that you could take something as complex as battlefield awareness, life and death, and distill it down to such simple, actionable imperatives.
Yeah.
And so we then said, let's try to figure out what is the shoot, move, communicate equivalent for building a thriving culture. And that's what we've tried to do.
I love that. And as a side note, my thought has always been when you're trying to simplify something, you're trying to teach your team the essence of what it is you want them to do. If you can't use an acronym, then keep it at 3 points, exactly three, not just one and not five or seven, but three.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to make it as simple as possible and no further. Right. If you become simplistic, and I'm sure a lot of people on your show have talked about this over the years, you know, there's a difference in simple and simplistic. When it becomes simplistic, game over, you lose.
Right.
And so we want to push it as far as we can and no further.
Exactly. So then, based on that, you found that there were three conditions, three qualities that go into what create a high performance team. And can you share those?
Yeah, let me sharpen that just a little. My language, not yours. We call them rules. And I've had people push back on that. It's like, we don't like rules. I said, well, hold on. If I can get you to suspend judgment for just a minute. I said, think about your favorite sport if there were no rules. It would be chaos.
Yeah.
I said, even think about American football. And I was talking to a guy from Down Under just recently. And I said, when you think about American football with no rules, you probably think of rugby. I'm talking no rules. I'm talking
pretty much.
It would be chaos if you had no rules. I said, let me tell you something else rules do for you. They not only help you understand how to play the game, but they help you understand how to win.
Right.
They also create the boundaries and parameters that you need to operate within lest you run the risk of being disqualified. If you violate the rules, you can lose. And so we chose the term rules unapologetically. And we say these are the three irreducible minimum contributions that a leader must make to creating a high performance culture. Three rules. You want to hear the first one?
Please.
The first one is aspire. Aspire. You must share your hopes and dreams for your culture. Now, some of your listeners are going, is this all you've got? Well, hang on.
Yeah.
We did global research. You would not believe how many leaders cannot articulate the aspiration for their culture. It's
amazing.
Staggering. It's staggering. And then some of them, who can say something, it's not succinct. It's not clear. It's not simple. It's not repeatable. And then a leader will say, well, it's in my head and it's in my heart. And I said, it's great to start there, but to create this culture, you need others to understand it, to embrace it, and to help make it a reality. And if it stays in your head and heart, you're not going anywhere, at least not anywhere that you have predetermined, preconceived. You're not going to fulfill your hopes and dreams if people don't know them. And right. So we think, yeah, you actually have to start there. And I'll say this, just a little editorial. There are three rules. People have said, well, is Aspire the most important? What I would say is it's the first among equals, because if you can't articulate it, you really can't consciously create it. So right. We think that's a critical first rule.
Well, so earlier you were saying that you were equating this like to sports or to games. As I was reading the book, I kept thinking, oh, okay, this is like the rules of the game. And we talked earlier about my boys and I, my wife, we love playing board games. And my oldest son, he likes to be the one to understand and to know and then to teach everyone the rules of the game. And a lot of times there's certain rules where here's how you play, but then there's also the rules of where here is the sequence of events that must be followed. And so it sounds like you're saying that if you're looking at a sequence of events that must be followed, this one, Aspire, comes first.
Absolutely. Now, the only, yes, first of all, my oldest son does the same thing that I don't usually read the rules because he's going to read them and he's going to commit them to memory and he's going to police them and I'm going to let him do all that, right? He's good at that. But the difference being that these three rules, there is an implied sequence. You need to start by having a clear aspiration, but you don't check it off and never return to it. You're going to always be moving through these three rules. So we'll address that here in a moment as we go forward. But that's the first rule.
Aspire. Okay. So when you're talking about aspire, you're talking about your aspiration. How important is it to ensure that you've got elements like a purpose statement, a vision statement, your mission statement, your core values, all those different elements?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You've got to actually be very, very careful there, because that's one reason that some leaders don't engage fully, because the terminology is confusing at best. And some just get tangled up in it. I've had so many leaders say, what's the difference in mission and purpose and vision? And do I need both? Do I need them all? And what about values? And what about ethos? Here's what I tell leaders. All of those things have one thing in common. And that is, they help you articulate your hopes and dreams for your culture. And so you need to choose. Do you want to use one of those mechanisms? Do you want to use two of them or three of them? And you do get to decide. The trick is, you then have to define them, not just what is it for your organization, but what do you mean by the word? Because there are very smart people out there that will use the term mission very differently. And there are people out there that will use the term vision very differently. So if you assume that your people know what you mean when you say vision, they don't. Because again, you can Google it and get opposing definitions of the same word.
Right.
So I tell leaders, start with your hopes and dreams and then figure out which of these mechanisms, which of these tools would be most helpful to you in conveying it to your people. Here's the test at the end of the day. Is it simple? Is it clear? Is it repeatable? Because you need people to understand it, to embrace it, and to help you make it a reality.
And so it sounds like that's what's important. It's defining to your people what your hopes and dreams are and the fact that they're simple, clear, and repeatable. For the most part, people aren't really going to care or looking at a checklist of, okay, what's the vision statement versus the mission statement versus the purpose statement.
Right.
We've talked about defining that, ensuring that it's clear. I think there can be a struggle sometimes when you're a leader recognizing where your organization is today and where you aspire for it to be. Is it okay to have an aspiration that doesn't quite meet today's reality?
Yes.
And if so, how do you communicate and recognize that?
Yes. Well, again, fantastic question. Somebody asked me that, a leader asked me that recently, and I've had that question over the years before we ever wrote a book on culture. And it often involves values. Like, is it okay to have aspirational values, like to name something we're not because we want to become? And I said, well, first of all, I would say all values are aspirational because people are at different places. New people at a different place than senior people, and even senior people may be at different places personally as it relates to embodying specific values. So get past, can there be aspirational or not? They're all aspirational. Here's the trick, though. If you set an aspiration that is, by some standards, not grounded in reality, like if you have awful customer service and you say, one of our values is customers first, you actually have to own your current reality and say, this is not true today, but we are going to work to make it true. It is who we are becoming. Oh, and guess what? You're always working to make that who you are becoming. So I think there's a credibility test. There's a trustworthiness test. Yeah. So if you have awful customer service and you say, you know, our new first core value is customers first, if you don't acknowledge reality, then people are just going to think you're out of touch. So I think open and honest communication is your best bet, particularly in this whole idea of aspiration, whether it be around vision or values or purpose or any of those tools or mechanisms. You just own it for people. And I think they respect that.
And I think a number of leaders are too afraid to be vulnerable enough to share that, to share, here's today's current reality, here's where we stand, and we're not where we need to be.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And this is just a quick throwback, some work we did a few years ago on leadership effectiveness, which we actually published in a book called Smart Leadership.
Oh, yeah.
We think the first choice that the best leaders always make is they choose to confront reality. So if you won't confront reality, you're never going to be a great leader. Let's just own that, face that, accept that, look in the mirror and go, I'm choosing something less than my best, because the best leaders are always anchored in truth so that they can lead from a position of strength. And that is a choice. And the higher you go in an organization, the more you're going to have to work to figure out what is reality. Because the data indicates, and I think our own personal experience, my experience would indicate, the higher you are in an organization, the harder it is for you to stay in touch. And you've got to be very intentional, deliberate, proactive. You've got to choose to confront reality.
Yeah. And I think frontline employees understand a lot of the realities more than leaders that are at higher up levels. And I sometimes will go into different companies, like employee groups, like where employees gather online to talk, and you can see where a lot of the frontline employees will talk about how delusional leadership can be and not recognizing the real reality.
Yeah, our research revealed a 40-point spread between senior leaders and frontline people, not on everything, but enough to get your attention. Something as simple as, we have a great place to work here. Yeah, senior leaders score it 40 points higher than frontline people. And we've seen that in multiple studies, and we've seen that around the world. That's not an American phenomenon. Leaders, senior leaders particularly, need to do a better job of getting in touch with the front lines and with reality itself. I think it's limiting the effectiveness of a lot of leaders.
It is. And I don't know if you've seen this research or not, but the same holds true with how leaders perceive their customer experience versus how customers perceive the customer experience. There's that same gap too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leaders just have to do a better job of getting in touch and staying in touch.
That's it. And recognizing reality and calling out that reality. All right. So we've talked about that first rule, aspire. And I've seen this a number of times in my career where a leader will go through all that work, all that effort to define their hopes and dreams, whether they call it a vision statement or right. a mission statement or whatever. They share it, they communicate it out, maybe in an all-employee town hall. And by the time they communicate it, their expectation is, great, that's done. I've communicated it. Now everyone knows it. Now everyone's going to follow it. It sounds like your next rule says that there needs to be some more work behind that.
There needs to be a lot of work behind that. The second rule is to amplify, to always be looking for ways to reinforce the aspiration. There is so much noise in the world. We thought amplify was a pretty cool word because you've literally, not literally, but figuratively, you've got to turn it up. You've got to get above the noise. People actually have to believe that you're serious. This is legitimate. And this is something that the organization is going to pursue. And so there are many, many things that leaders can do and organizations can do to amplify, but you've got to help people believe that you're on a journey and they need to get on board.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, it can't just be just that one communication, one announcement. So what are some of the best ways to amplify it to your people?
Well, our research revealed the best way is to show people the way. People always watch the leader. We've got an entire chapter in the book on role modeling.
Yes.
People watch the leader even if we don't want them to watch the leader. And one of the things they're trying to figure out is, are you trustworthy? And one way they determine that is, does what you say align with what you're doing? And so it's just so critical that leaders show people the way. That is so, so helpful when you're trying to shape and transform a culture.
Well, and I've seen this a number of times. It doesn't matter. Well, in the situations that I've seen, it didn't matter as much what the leader said the culture of the team, the culture of the organization should be. The team created the culture and the team created all their actions based on what they observed from the leader. So if the leader acted a certain way, then the team acted that same way as well. And so
people always watch the leader.
Yeah. What was it? More is caught than taught.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, one of my favorite historical examples, if I can take just a second, some people have told me they like this story. I don't know if you've got some history buffs on the line here, but Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
When he was 22 years old, began a campaign to conquer the known world, which he did in less than a decade. In 326, I guess he was about 8 years into that. This entire time, he had been talking to his men about the importance of bravery and courage. History tells us that he said, "You'll never die with an arrow in your back because we will never retreat." We can't find the source on that, but it's widely attributed to Alexander. And so he talked about the values all the time, but he also led from the front. He was in every battle with his men, every major battle. And in 326, this kind of reached a crescendo. They were in modern-day Turkey. Maladies are the folks they were battling, and they were attempting to take a tower, and Alexander felt his men were moving too slowly with the ladder, so he grabbed it, put it on the wall, went up while the enemy is firing arrows at him, gets to the top of the wall. He's in hand-to-hand combat. His men now are terrified. Their leader is up there by himself. They rush the ladder and destroy it, all trying to go up the ladder. So Alexander, seeing what has just happened, decides, well, okay. So he jumps in to the enemy citadel and is now fighting hand to hand with the enemy.
Yeah.
By the time his men get the ladder, get up there, get over the other side, he's up against a tree, you know, to cover his back. He's fighting with an arrow that has pierced him under his breastplate. It was a near mortal wound. It was not the only time he was injured, many, many, many times, but this was near mortal. In fact, many of the men felt he had died. through this event. And so historians have this raging debate about why his army was so successful. And some have reached the conclusion that they weren't really fighting just for their country, and they weren't just fighting for a cause, and they certainly weren't just fighting for a paycheck, but many of them were fighting for him because he was their leader and he was showing them what those values looked like in action. And I just think there's a powerful lesson for all of us. People always watch the leader.
Oh, absolutely. And it's there's so many lessons with that. But then one thing too, like in that specific battle, didn't he have to talk his men through performing surgery on him in removing Zero?
Yes, he did. And he passed out several times during the process because they had no surgeon with them on that particular expedition. And so, yes, he talked his men into break off the arrow, cut me with your sword, pull it out, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. The history is it's fun to read the history of from that era about that battle and about that situation. But quite a good example of showing people what the values in action look like, modeling the culture that you're trying to create.
Yeah, well, because you know, as a leader, when you model the culture, then your people realize, well, he's not just giving lip service; like he means this, and he's willing to do this. And whether it's your leader or even just being able to see somebody else do the action, seeing somebody be able to do that thing, we recognize a lot of times, oh, you know what? Number one, it can be done. And I can do that too. So therefore, I will do that.
Yep. It's very, very powerful. One more tactic, I guess you could call it a strategy, but it has many tactical implications to the question of how do you amplify the aspiration? Storytelling. Storytelling is so powerful and has been. And in the book, we kind of go into some of the reasons stories resonate and connect with people. But most people know that experientially, intuitively. There's just something so powerful about stories. Now, one more throwback to Alexander. He made a practice of going into the tents of the wounded, learning their stories of heroism and bravery, and then he would go tell the other men about the guys in the tent. So storytelling has been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, but it always has the power to shape behavior. It always has the power to transform the head and the heart. So for leaders who want a particular culture, I would say start collecting stories about your preferred future state. When you see someone living the values, pursuing the purpose, helping you move towards the mission, you need to make heroes of those people. You need to tell those stories. And I know one more. I know you used to work at FedEx.
I did.
I'm still telling the FedEx story from 25 years ago about the guy who couldn't get the box unlocked. So he loaded the whole box on his truck and took it back to the service center. I mean, that's the culture you wanted at FedEx, right? And you told that story, and now it's part of the lore of business and leadership, right? I was up at Harvard a few years ago and they're telling that story. Everybody's telling that story. That's just an example of the power of story. It's the power of story.
And what's so great, especially about FedEx, is that there are hundreds or more stories like that every single year. And each one of those stories usually gets told and shared. And a lot of those employees, especially the frontline employees, they get recognized and rewarded for that. And a lot of times, like the best of the best stories get recognized and rewarded at the end of the year, like in a big award ceremony.
Yep. So you've lived what I'm talking about. And I'm appreciative of the example you guys set at FedEx. I mean, I know you were there 20 years. So yeah, you've shaped the world through the work you did there.
It was a lot of fun being able to do that. But one thing that I learned and tried to do at FedEx, which is something that Alexander the Great did as well. When we think about storytelling, I think a lot of times some leaders may just simply hear, oh, storytelling. You know what? I'll just simply tell an aspirational story. And it's kind of high level and it's not really specific and it's not a real life story. My belief is that capturing and curating those real life stories from those real life heroes is what is more inspiring than just trying to craft or create the aspirational type of story.
I agree. I mean, I think they've got to be real. They have to be real. Unless a leader gets into imagine a day and they're clearly talking about something that doesn't exist. But if you're trying to tell a story, I think you lose credibility if people find out you're making up your stories. You got to tell real stories.
Absolutely. All right. So we've talked about aspire. We've talked about amplify. What's the third rule?
All right. I want to give you a quick disclaimer because I deal with this and I have for years. I mean, before we wrote this book, before we had this simple formula, if you have a clear aspiration and you amplify it well, your culture will begin to shift and it will begin to move toward the aspiration. Well, I'm a leader and I know leaders and we love to check stuff off. We love progress. We love to move on. And if you're not careful, you'll see a culture taking shape and you'll say, done. And you'll want to check it off and you want to move on. If you do that, you're in real serious jeopardy. Because when you move into protection mode, if you try to shrink wrap this culture and protect it, you'll suffocate.
Yeah.
You'll suffocate it. The third rule is to adapt, to always work to enhance the culture. Always work to enhance the culture. Now, real quick, I'll say that there are different facets and different ways that you can enhance a culture. The only one we really address in the book is to deal with critical gaps. In the book, we call them toxins.
Yes.
If a leader, if you discern toxins, which I would say are patterns of unhealthy and unproductive behavior, you have got to attack that because those toxins can become maladies and they will kill your company. They will kill your organization. So that's one way you enhance. You attack critical gaps. But another way you can enhance is to double down on your strengths. Because if you're really good at something, let's pretend there are no toxins at a critical or clear and present danger level.
Right.
And you say, what are we really good at? What would happen if we intentionally got better at that thing? Well, you've just enhanced your culture. And then the third is one that is not often discussed. It's adding new capabilities as a way to enhance your culture. We did this 15 years ago. It was determined by our senior leadership that we needed to be more innovative. Now, it's not that we were strangers to innovation. I mean, Truett Cathy invented the chicken sandwich. So we've had pockets of innovation and we've had individuals who were more innovative. But from a cultural aspiration, it was, hey, we need this to become part of who we are. And so we set that as a new aspiration. We began to amplify that. And I would argue that we're much more innovative as a culture and as a people today than we were back then because a leader said, hey, let's adapt. Let's adapt. And in that case, as I said, it involved adding to the aspiration. So you've got to be willing to adapt.
So sadly, there is no finish line to this to this game.
And that surprises a lot of leaders. I mean, I don't blame them. Maybe nobody's ever explained it to them. I had a CEO call me. This was before we did this work because this is a topic. The reason we began studying this, as I said, is it was bubbling up everywhere. Right. And I had a CEO from a bank, as I recall, maybe some type of financial institution. He called me and he said, hey, can you help us? We want you to install a new culture for us and we'd like it to be like yours. And I was a bit concerned by his choice of language. And I said, well, let's talk about the word install. He said, what's wrong with the word install? I said, well, nothing if you're talking about a refrigerator. But I mean, I said, the culture you admire, thank you for admiring our culture, we've been working on it for decades. I've been working on it for over 40 years. And I said, guess what? We're going to work on it for the next 40 years. He said, I don't understand. I said, which part don't you understand? He said, can't you move on? Aren't you finished? And I went, that's the point. I said, now, if you want me to talk to your leadership team about how to create and maintain a culture, I'll be happy to. He never called me back because he couldn't get his head around, I got to work on this forever. So yeah, you got to work on it forever. Not just got to, it's your responsibility, but it's your opportunity. Because see, culture, everybody's going to have a culture, every organization. It's either soul enriching or soul crushing. It's life giving or not. And so let's have a culture by design, not by default. And so some people don't like the idea, can't get their head around. You mean I got to work on this forever? Yeah, it's part of your privilege as a leader.
You get to work on it forever. Hopefully, this just now came to me as you were talking about it. And I don't know if this is like the right analogy or not, but I'm thinking about my marriage to my wife and I'm thinking about my kids and my family. You know, my wife and I have been married for, well, certainly not long enough, but we did a lot of work when we were engaged to say, here's the type of relationship we want to have. Like, here's my view. Here's your view. Here's how we work together on this. During the first handful of years of marriage, we worked together on it. Now, even though we feel like things are good, we know that we want to continue working on it. So we're going through a marriage program at our church to continue that. And I see us doing more of those exercise and programs and everything else to continue to work on our marriage and the culture of our family for as long as we can.
I think that's a great example.
Cool. There you go. So be thankful that there's no finish line. You get to work on it forever. Well, Mark, we've talked about all these rules here. All these rules. It's really three simple rules and then all the things that go into the rules. But when it comes down to it, what do you think are your hopes and your dreams for the cultures of these leaders that are hearing your lessons, that are reading your book?
Well, first, let me say, I know it's pretty bold for me to have an aspiration for you, but I do. I don't know if you've seen the movie Ready Player One or read Ernest Cline's book by the same name. But Spielberg,
I've got the book right up there.
Spielberg made a movie about that. And so for those that don't know the storyline, I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but let me set the stage. And then I want to tell you why I'm sharing this. The story unfolds in two worlds, the real world and a virtual world. And the virtual world is called the Oasis. And the hero of the story is a young man named Wade Watson. And Wade is talking about the Oasis. And he said, people go to the Oasis for what they can do there. Yes. And they stay because of who they can become. You know, that's what I wish to be true for your culture, that you create a place that is so compelling that people are drawn there for what they can do, that they can actually get a job and provide for their family. But I also hope that this place will be so life-giving, so soul-enriching, that they stay there because of who they can become. And you can do it. You really, really can do it. These rules will work in any organization of any size, any industry, for-profit, not-for-profit, anywhere in the world. Aspire, amplify, and adapt. Culture rules.
I love that analogy. I love when I read that in the book. It's like, oh yeah, I love Ready Player One. So that's a great analogy. And that's a good aspiration to have in what you can do with your culture. Well, yeah. Mark, I have really learned a lot from you. I've learned a lot from your content, from your books, from talking today. But where can people go to learn more?
LeadEveryday.com is a place to go, and it's actually a site under construction. Right now, you'll find two things there: information about this book and a store with access to previous books and field guides and things of that nature. There's a new fully orbed site coming in the weeks to come. You can sign up there if you'd like. But I'd also like to give you my cell number in case you need to reach out to me. It's 678-612-8441. 678-612-8441. And I would enjoy the opportunity to serve you in the future. If there's anything you can think of I can help with.
Wow. So the website itself is great, but then your own phone number too, being able to reach out to you that way. That's mighty bold of you.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Love that. Well, Mark, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I hope to chat with you again soon.
I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Mark Miller. So go and learn more from him at leadeveryday.com. You'll find all of Mark's books there, and you'll get access to practical tools and insights, all designed to help you build and lead your own high-performance culture. And like Mark boldly shared, you now have his cell phone number and you can reach out to him that way too. I'm not going to be the one to share his number here though. You can go back about 30 seconds and listen to Mark share that again. And if you're enjoying the Simple Brand podcast, go ahead and hit the subscribe button because it's going to make it so much simpler for you to get future episodes like the next one featuring Adam Toporek. Adam's an internationally recognized customer experience expert. He's a keynote speaker, and he's a customer service trainer who helps organizations transform their relationships with their customers through better strategy, training, and communication. He's the author of Be Your Customer's Hero, he's the founder of Customers That Stick, and he's the former co-host of the Crack the Customer Code podcast. Adam and I discuss all his lessons around helping your customer-facing teams become more confident, more in control, and more successful in creating happy, loyal customers. Customers that see your brand as their hero. So go ahead and subscribe. You'll automatically get Adam's episode as soon as it's live. Until then, keep it simple.